Good afternoon and welcome. Welcome to those who are on the phone to this full-year result presentation for Babcock & Brown Wind Partners. I'm going to be referring to the presentation, which is uploaded onto our website and the ASX. Joining me today, Gerard Dover, our Chief Financial Officer, Jeff Butalis, our Chief Operating Officer, Rosalie Duff, our Investor Relations Manager, and I've spotted in the audience our Chairman, Peter Hofbauer, just over here. Turning to the agenda, we are going to run through briefly some of the highlights for the year. Gerard's going to pick up a bit on the financial performance, Jeff on the operational performance, and I'll give a brief wrap-up on the strategy and outlook for the business. Turning to slide four, thought it'd be worthwhile just having a brief recap of who we are for the benefit of new shareholders in particular. Babcock & Brown Wind Partners is a global wind energy business. We now have 35 wind farms spanning five countries on three continents. We're now one of the top players in the industry, the top five players in the industry worldwide. Our portfolio is diversified by geography, wind resource, currency, equipment supplier, customer, and regulatory regime. And we deliver value for security holders by managing that portfolio efficiently and by making accretive acquisitions from an extensive pipeline, which I'll talk to today. Our operating cash flows are substantially underpinned by long-term contracts and long-term legislated tariff regimes across multiple jurisdictions. We retain some exposure to increasing support for renewable energy deployment measures that are happening around the world and also some upside exposure to rising electricity prices. Our distributions are paid from net operating cash flows. We have a very attractive pipeline for potential future transactions, and most of you will know that comes from significantly from the Babcock & Brown pipeline, Babcock & Brown having been a developer, operator, owner of wind farms for nearly 20 years now. Also from our framework agreements with Gamesa in Spain and with Flambeck in Germany. We have a conservative capital structure and risk management policies consistent with our aim to protect and grow distributions to security holders. Turn now to the performance. Underlying performance was very strong. Generation increased by 149%. EBITDA and US cash distributions increased by 90%. Net operating cash flow increased by 133% to $79.8 million. And our FY07 distribution increased by 22% on a per security basis to 12.5 cents per security. We've increased the size of the business and the diversification of the business significantly, investing nearly $1 billion during FY07, and we have proposed acquisitions in front of us, which many of you will be familiar with, being the US07 and Enesis acquisitions, which are subject to a vote of security holders, which is proposed to be put to the security holders at our AGM on the 9th of November. In terms of asset management, we've had a continued focus on building the operations capability in the business. We've completed our first review of wind and energy assessments, and I'm pleased to advise there's been no material adjustments made to our P50 estimates as a result of that process conducted in conjunction with external consultants. And we've commenced our interannual climate variability analysis, which Jeff will talk to in a bit more detail. Finally, in terms of capital management, you'd be aware we successfully completed an institutional placement in April this year, and recently we've also closed our global refinance facility, a 1.03 billion euro facility, that's been successfully closed and syndicated. Turning to slide six, the financial highlights, I think some of these things I've said before in terms of the growth. You might notice in particular the importance of the US growth on the revenue slide. You can see that our acquisitions in FY07 have contributed substantially to the revenue we're now securing from the US market. The other numbers I think I've mentioned on the previous slide. On the next slide, slide 7, in terms of acquisition, you can see the increase in acquisition capex, as I said, $944 million for the year. And in terms of gearing, we're still conservatively geared, risen from 29% on a net debt to EV basis at the start of the year to 45% on a net debt to EV basis at 30 June 2007. In terms of the operational highlights on slide 8, as we've advised previously at the time of the placement and also in the Alinta scheme booklet, which dealt with the period up to 31 May, production has been about 10% below forecast, but within expectations. That's due largely to winds being lower across a couple of our wind farms. In particular, about three quarters of that underperformance is due to low wind, and in turn about three quarters of the low wind performance is due entirely to the Olivo wind farm portfolio in Spain. Importantly, the continued expansion and diversification of our portfolio reduces such regional impacts. For example, Spain, which was about 30% of the portfolio at the beginning of FY07, is now down to about 13%. So a similar year in a particular region like Spain, if it happened again, would have much less impact because we've increased our diversification and scale. The number of wind regions we covered during the year was increased by 50%, from 6 to 9. Another measure, I mentioned three quarters of the underperformance was low wind. Of the balancing items, availability, there was some shortfall in availability, though relatively small. Over 40% of that availability shortfall is actually recovered through warranty arrangements, and the remaining unrecovered portion represents significantly a balance of plant availability issues in the US, which we've since identified as areas where we can improve significantly, so we see upside in that area. And Jeff will talk in a bit more detail about that. And I mentioned also the independent P50 analysis, which supports our current portfolio P50 forecasts. Construction proceeding well on the two wind farms that we have under construction, Lake Bonnie and Frouge, both on time and on budget. On slide 9, just continuing on the theme, the diversification, you can see the contribution to EBITDA from the various regions or countries shown on the left-hand side, and then the increased wind diversification you can see by region on the right-hand side. Now we have 9 different wind regions. We turn then to slide 10, distributions. FY07 distribution of 12.5 cents per security, the 22.5% increase on FY06. Our FY08 distribution guidance is 14 cents per security, or 12% above FY07. Distributions in FY08 are expected to be fully tax deferred, and the proposed acquisitions that I mentioned earlier, US07 and Genesis, provide growth for further distribution growth in the medium term, and we will be updating our distribution guidance in the notice of meeting that goes out to security holders to consider that acquisition at the AGM on the 9th of November. I'll now hand over to Gerard Dover, our Chief Financial Officer, who will run through the financial statements.
Thanks, Miles. As Miles has already described, our continued investment in the US means that this component of the portfolio is increasingly a significant driver of performance and cash flow. We do not consolidate the US in the statutory accounts, but for presentation purposes today, and as we did at the half-year result, we have included the US within the operating results to provide a more complete and meaningful description of the BBW financial and operational performance. On slide 12, revenues. Total revenues at our wind farms, including the US operations, were $171.9 million for the year. This compares to $85.6 million in FY06. But in slide 12, we've bridged from the original IPA forecast of $124.6 million. Acquisitions, particularly in the US, were clearly the most significant contributor, increasing revenues from the IPO forecast of $73.3 million. Wind energy was within expectations but below the long-term mean, with an adverse variance of 15.2 million. 11 million of this variance was experienced at our Olivo wind farms in Spain. The sum of availability variances across the portfolio reduced revenues by 4.6 million, and this is after revenue compensation of 3.2 million recouped in Spain. Network loss factors reduced revenues at our Australian wind farms by 1.8 million, and as described at the first half results, this follows the implementation of higher loss factors by the National Market Manager. Net tariff variances were positive 0.6 million for the portfolio. Spanish tariffs were 1.9 million above IPO forecasts for the year, offsetting lower market tariffs in the US, mainly for our Crescent Ridge wind farm. This was after a first half net gains of 3 million in Spain and reflects second half reductions in the market pool price. As expected, the strong Australian dollar, particularly against the US, in the second half reduced revenues by a total of 4.9 million. And I will describe the FX impact on BBW result later on in the presentation. Slide 13 is the cash flow. Combining the operational cash flows of the business generated an EBITDA, including US distributions, of 124.4 million. Corporate costs of 24.7 million include base fees of 14.8, management expenses of 6.3, and legal and tax costs of 3.6 million. Working capital and other non-cash items made a combined contribution of 15.9 million in the period. As described at the first half result, this figure includes the receipt of compensation payments, amortization of upfront O&M costs, and the recovery of VAT balances accumulated in Spain. Finance costs and tax paid totaled 37.6 million. 32 million of this is net interest. Tax paid was 3.7 million, representing payments in Spain. Bank charges and FX gains on cash make up the balance. Gains on FECs of 1.8 million represent the forward cover put in place to protect the Aussie dollar value of cash flows denominated in euros and US dollars. I'll go through this line item in more detail later. This brings us to a total net operating cash flow of 79.8 million for the year. After a notional repayment of debt totaling 16.4 million and total distributions to security holders net of DLP of 59.7 million, net operating cash flow carried forward is 3.7 million. On the right-hand side of the slide, we've summarised the per-security cash flow after deducting the securities attributable to construction assets. This derives a net operating cash flow per-security of 15.9 cents, or 12.6 cents per security after the national repayment of debt. Moving on to the income statement, slide 14. As I've just described, BBW pays its distributions from net operating cash flow. However, I'd like to provide a brief explanation of the income statement for FY7, including accounting treatments for some of the line items. Firstly, there are the US wind farm investments. From a balance sheet and income statement point of view, the US operations are treated as financial investments. We include them in the balance sheet at fair value, and the movement in fair value is shown in the income statement. This treatment is specified under AASB 128. And follows the principles of AASB 139. BBW has used a discounted cash flow valuation approach to calculate the fair values. Key changes to the valuation inputs during the period include the distributions received, a small increase in the discount rates, and increases in long-term energy prices. In total, the change in fair value for the US portfolio in FY7 was 18.6 million. Just to reiterate, this has no impact on our distributions. Net borrowing costs from a P&L perspective are made up of a number of significant individual items. Net interest was 32 million, while bank fees and amortised loan costs were 8.2 million. The global refinance of BBW's project and short-term loan facilities gave rise to a write-off of previously capitalised arrangement fees of 16 million, offset by 23.9 million of gains on interest rate swaps, also crystallised by the refinance. The reported net profit for the year was 13.8 million, following a net loss of 16.2 million for FY6. Slide 15, acquisitions and investments. This slide provides a summary of investment activities during the financial year, which totaled almost $1 billion. Approximately $700 million has been applied to acquisitions in the period. $480 million relates to the acquisitions in the US from the BNB pipeline. These include Sweetwater 3, Kumeyaay, Bear Creek, Jersey Atlantic, Aragon, Buena Vista, Mendoza, Allegheny Ridge Phase 1, and the GSD wind farms. In Spain, we invested approximately $200 million through the negotiated acquisition of Monte Sazo and Cerro de Cando, plus our Spanish framework asset, Conjuro. In July, we have already bought a second wind farm from this framework agreement called Valdecañas. Finally, in Germany, we invested approximately $20 million in our first German framework asset, Karst. In addition to these acquisitions, BBW has invested almost $250 million in construction projects during FY07, and these continue on time and on budget. The 159-megawatt Lake Bonney 2 wind farm is the major component due for completion in FY08. Slide 16, balance sheet and interest rate hedging. Net debt in the period has increased by approximately $700 million to just under $1.1 billion at the balance date and reflects the investment activities I've just described. Gearing at the balance date was 45.1%, up from 29.3% at the end of FY06. A simple average of the interest rate for FY07 was 6.2%, up 40 basis points from the FY06 average. Net interest cover at 3.1 times remains conservative. In these times of volatile markets, we thought it would be useful to expand on the approach that BBW takes to financial risk management. With respect to interest rate hedging, we've shown the average rate on swap contracts is 5.3% and the average tenor of the swaps is 9.7 years. As far as the percentage of debt that is hedged, we've provided a 15-year horizon here which shows that BBW has currently hedged in excess of 75% of its debt, and this proportion remains high for a number of years. Slide 17 summarises the refinancing. And continuing on the theme of debt management, BBW refinanced the vast majority of its existing project debt, construction debt, corporate debt, and short-term facilities into a single global facility. A key outcome of the refinancing is the ability for BBW to achieve a greater degree of capital efficiency. This is achieved as facilities have been sized off a consolidated cash flow profile, which reduces the variability of individual asset cash flow profiles, for example, the USB class returns or construction assets such as LB2. In addition, the portfolio effect provides a higher revenue assurance than individual assets. The new facility involves a multi-currency structure with a single BBW borrower for each region, in other words, Australia, Europe and the USA. The multi-currency structure enables BBW to retain its natural currency hedge of revenues and debt service. The new facilities can be resized as acquisitions are completed on an ongoing basis, subject to lenders' approvals at the time of each new investment. Combining the resizing aspects, a set of common terms, and the absence of security at the asset level, the new facilities provide BBW with an efficient approach to financing growth. We also expect the facility will reduce borrowing costs overall. As previously announced, BBW agreed a revised base fee calculation with its manager. This change to the base fee formula ensures that no inadvertent increase in the base fee occurs. This financing is a significant individual transaction as it represents the first global wind farm portfolio financing and demonstrates the credit strength of BBW's portfolio. Similar to a standard corporate facility, we expect BBW will refinance the facility within 3 years. Slide 18 summarises the FX impact on the FY07 cash flow result. As you can see here in the shown area, revenues were adversely affected by the strengthening Australian dollar by $4.9 million. Mitigating this will be offsetting the impact of operating costs, interest and debt repayments denominated in euros and US dollars. Before hedging activities, the loss was approximately $2.4 million, and this has been mitigated to the benefit of our rolling FX program that provided a cash flow benefit of $1.8 million, leaving a residual cash flow impact for FY07 of $0.6 million. And on slide 19, to expand on the FX landscape for BBW in more depth, the pie chart shown here represents the revenues, costs, and net operating cash flow for the current BBW portfolio. The pie charts also provide a sense of the relative size of these exposures, as well as the residual net exposure after its rolling hedge program. And as you can see from the sensitivity table, the net operating cash flow exposure to currency movements is significantly reduced. I'll now hand you over to Jeff, who will run through the FY7 operations. Jeff.
Thanks, Gerard. In the introduction, Miles provided a high-level summary of the performance of generation in generation terms of the portfolio. I'll now provide further details on the underlying performance on a country-by-country basis with some specific wind farm commentary in order to provide further colour regarding wind conditions through FY07 as well as wind farm availability. Firstly, and reiterating Miles' earlier comment, the FY07 period has been a historically low wind period across a number of BBW's operational wind farms. These low wind conditions accounted for approximately 75% of BBW's underperformance. Based on our modelling of the portfolio, these wind conditions are similar to the 1991 to 1994 and 1997-98 periods. I'll return to the topic of modelling shortly, as well as the analysis of operational performance. I'm sure you're keen to understand and appreciate how we are applying this knowledge to the future. However, first, some further brief comments regarding operational performance at the portfolio level. The range of performance for all wind farms across all months varies significantly. In total, 30% of all wind farm months were above budget, with individual performance ranging from 35% to 172% of budget. The low forecast availability at several wind farms in the US and Spain also resulted in some underperformance. However, this was partly offset by warranty payments. Earlier in the year, we advised that we would progressively review the independent wind and energy assessments. It's now been completed for the first 5 wind farms that had sufficient operational data and showed some signs of continued underperformance. These reviews support the current portfolio P50 forecast, and having resulted in a non-material adjustment. In asset management terms, we remain very focused on several key areas as we continue to expand our teams around the world. In particular, we're confident that improvements in availability can be made in the next 1 to 2 years. Moving to slide 22, and returning to the topic of model performance, this slide describes the model performance of BBW's portfolio. We presented a similar graph previously. It represents the model performance of BBW's current portfolio of wind farms based on recorded wind data over the past 16 years in this instance. This particular graph has been updated to take account of BBW's acquisitions through the FY07 period and represents the model performance of 28 wind farms. In addition, on this occasion, I've also cross-referenced one of BBW's wind farms to contrast the much greater variability of a single wind farm compared to that of the portfolio, a key strength of BBW's strategy of diversification in mitigating resource variability. The ongoing analysis of model performance continues to demonstrate that BBW's annual generation will experience natural inter-annual variability. That is, for the current portfolio, BBW would have experienced similar wind conditions in previous years, as noted. This is quite normal and expected, and it will become increasingly predictable. It's also worth reiterating at this point Miles' earlier comment that, in our view, this benefit of reduced inter-annual variability will continue to strengthen as the portfolio diversifies further. On a final point to note is that we are and will take account of this inter-annual variability in BBW's generation forecasts. Returning to operational performance details at a country level, slide 23, provides an operational overview for performance in Australia. Australia has 2 operational wind farms, Lake Bonnie 1 in South Australia and the Alinta wind farm in Western Australia. Performance continued to track 6% below the long-term mean, or P50, due to a continuation of low average wind speeds, notwithstanding several very good months. Availability has been very good on both wind farms, although newly applied network loss factors work against it, which primarily impacts the quantum of renewable energy credits generated. Finally, for Australia, even though not mentioned specifically on the slide, construction of our 159 megawatt Lake Bonnie Stage 2 wind farm is going very well. And at this point in time, we expect to be fully operational before the end of the current financial year. Slide 24, operational performance in the USA. BBW's portfolio has grown significantly in the US through FY07, from 5 wind farms to currently 15, spread across many regions. The large portfolio performed at 90% of the long-term mean, compared with 99% in the previous financial year. The underperformance in the US related from a combination of low average wind speeds and several availability issues as noted on the site. This below forecast availability has been partly offset by warranty payments relating to turbine availability, with several claims yet to be finalised. On an availability adjusted basis, this compensation adds a further 2% to generation performance. The non-turbine related issues, availability issues, largely relate to balance of plant that we are confident will be rectified over the next 1 to 2 years. Operational performance for Spain. As noted earlier by Miles, Spain had a particularly poor year, with 82% of 50-50 generation contributing to more than 50% of the overall portfolio underperformance. Even though Spain represents a smaller proportion of the overall portfolio, as you'd expect, we are very focused on understanding the underperformance in greater detail. 5 of 6 wind farms had average wind speed significantly below the long-term mean. An external review of the wind and energy assessments for the first 2 wind farms, Sierra del Trigo and La Muela, have been completed. The remaining 4 wind farms will be reviewed once we have 3 or more years of operational data. Availability has been good across all the wind farms, except for Sierra Nevada, for which compensation has been received. Underperformance was partly offset through FY07 by the higher than forecast tariff under the market option. Finally, for Germany, on slide 26, the operational performance for BBW's portfolio of 4 wind farms in Germany improved significantly in FY07, from 73% to 92% of the P50. The second and third quarters were particularly good. Once again, availability has been in line with our forecasts for Germany, reflecting the good performance of the German-based turbine manufacturers who provide our O&M services there. Moving on to slide 27, I would now like to spend a few minutes outlining progress in the areas of asset management and forecasting. As described in the FY07 operational performance results, they are the result of the impact of natural inter-annual variability as well as several availability issues. We're confident that both of these can be addressed through our asset management activities and by applying the learning from the analysis of BBW's operational performance and forecasting. Firstly, in regard to asset management, we've continued to expand the capacity of our operations teams, particularly at the individual wind farm level, as well as other initiatives, including the establishment of a 24-hour wind farm operations centre in the US. Other operation standards will follow. The overall asset management team now consists of over 25 people, and this will continue to expand. We're also expanding our network of service providers beyond that of just the turbine manufacturers so that we have choices where appropriate. All of the operations teams are focused on wind availability, rather than simply the traditional time-based availability that is typical of the basis of contractual warranties. This may sound simple and obvious, but in practice, it requires diligence 24 hours a day, even at 3 o'clock in the morning, with the focus of our team and the service providers being to minimise the downtime when the wind is blowing. It means doing the basics really well. Fast response time, sufficient technical expertise on hand, and of course scheduling servicing activities for when during low wind periods. This task is aided by ability to remotely monitor the wind farms, and this in turn is aided by a key tool in the whole management process, SCADA systems, and our progressive integration of the respective and various SCADA technology that we have acquired. One system that communicates with all wind farms is a primary tool in this regard, as it is for further automating of our reporting capabilities. I have mentioned reporting in previous presentations, and we're continuing to progress towards a totally automated system for all wind farms to feed into. This currently exists at a country level. The next step is to bring it to a portfolio level. Moving on to forecasting, we are applying what we have learned from the analysis of BBW's operational performance, as well as our modelling work. This includes incorporating, firstly, more conservative availability ramp-up assumptions in our forecasts for new wind farms, until they're bedded down and we know them better. further includes the analysis of the operational performance as a key component of the reviews of our wind and energy assessments, which are verified independently. The first of these reviews have been completed and has led to a non-material reduction in the portfolio generation. These reviews will continue on a rolling basis and the P50s will be recalibrated where appropriate. Finally, on slide 28, referring to further research underway that will leverage recent developments in climatology modelling and access to a more extensive data set for BKW's forecasting. The access this capability has been relatively recent, has been made possible by the relatively recent focus on climate change, and in particular will allow BBW to incorporate this information into short-term forecasts, especially as they relate to market trading. I'm happy to respond to further questions later. In the meantime, I'll hand back to Miles.
Thanks, Jeff. Turning then to the strategy and outlook. The factors driving the wind energy industry, as many of you will be aware, are the drive in all of the jurisdictions that we operate in to increase the level of renewable energy and clean energy deployment as a response to concerns about climate change. Also significantly a driver is security of energy supply. And I'll just refer to a couple of things I noticed in recent reports. The EU Commission recently reported that its imported energy dependence is going to rise from 50% now to 65% by 2030, that's EU-wide. On a specific fuel basis, the dependence will rise to 84% of imports for gas by 2030 and 93% dependence on imported oil by 2030. Against that background, security of energy supply is one of the reasons why the EU recently increased its renewable energy target to 20% renewables by 2020. Similarly, in the US Congress recently passed a bill requiring 15% renewables by 2020. As most people would be aware, wind is the most competitive renewable energy technology that's able to meet this target. I mean, the only other similar one would be hydro, but that doesn't have the growth capacity to fill that sort of growth in renewable energy. BBW is very well positioned as a leader in the industry to participate in the strong growth that's expected between now and 2030. And just looking through some of the figures recently, over 25% growth in 2006, and installed capacity for the wind sector of approximately 150 gigawatt hours by 2010. The other driver, as I've mentioned previously, was electricity demand. Rising electricity demand is expected to double the requirement for electricity between 2002 and 2030. And also during that period, there'd be significant replacement of probably over a third of the existing generation capacity around the world. Turn now to growth projects and proposed acquisitions on slide 31. You can see our construction projects there that we mentioned before, Lake Bonnie and Frouge, cast one additional turbine there. Allegheny Stage 2 is the last of the US06 portfolio. That's been delayed a bit. You might recall that we had the second closing of that portfolio was also delayed due to some blade issues. That was closed in June. Allegheny Stage 2 will be delayed a bit as a follow-on from that delay. The economic outcome, I might point out, remains unchanged for us. As many would recall, that the deal that was done here is a fixed IRR, so the economic impact is zero, but there is a cash flow impact in 08. For that delay. The other two at the end here, Enesis and US07 portfolio, obviously the two that I mentioned. We're completing the due diligence and negotiated terms with Babcock & Brown on those transactions, and that will be put to a security holder vote on the 9th of November. We expect to dispatch notice of meeting for that meeting in late September. Turning to the pipeline on slide 32, Babcock & Brown's pipeline remains our key pipeline. There's still over 3,000 megawatts of projects under development in Babcock & Brown that we would expect
are likely to be offered to BBW in the near to medium term. We also have the Gamesa Framework Agreement, assets starting to come through under that agreement now, and the Planbeck Framework Agreement, where we're starting to see assets come through in Germany from that agreement. Of course, we continue our negotiated acquisitions, recently acquiring a couple of wind farms in Spain from independent parties, and we have a number of other opportunities that we're pursuing at the moment. So we have a very strong pipeline. On slide 33, prospective cash flow, we've already announced in relation to US07 and Enesis that we would expect a minimum accretion from those transactions of $55 million in FY08 and $65 million in FY09. You can see that table flows through to the net operating cash flow after notional debt amortization per security, of 14.4 cents per security in 08 and 16.5 cents per security in 09. And as I mentioned previously, we'll be updating our distribution guidance as part of the notice of meeting materials for the meeting to consider those two transactions. On slide 34, prospective gearing, still conservative. As I mentioned, at the end of June, we're at 45% net debt to EV. After the proposed two acquisitions, we'll be up to 60%, still a conservative gearing level. Those acquisitions are supported by the current equity base, that is the proceeds from the placement that was completed in April, and also the proceeds from our participation in the Olympus scheme. Turning then to the wrap-up on slide 36. I've mentioned the drivers for our industry. I've also mentioned that we are now one of the top five players in the world. We now have a well-diversified portfolio and a very efficient scale. We are still growing the portfolio rapidly. We have continued growth in net operating cash flow per security in line with the accretive acquisitions that we've been able to make from the pipeline. We have an extremely healthy pipeline of new deals available to us through our relationships with BNB, Gamesa and Planbeck. We have a conservative capital structure, and our distributions, FYOA distribution of 14 cents per security is expected to be fully tax deferred. That wraps up the sort of formal part of the presentation. What we're proposing to do now is to invite questions from the floor here in Sydney, and once we've been through the questions from the floor, we'll then invite people on the phone to ask questions. So if anybody here has a question from the floor, we'll take those first. Jason?
Thanks, Mark. Yeah, just going back to the issue of P50, two things stand out. One is looking at model generation over, I guess, a 16 to 17 year period. It looks on average as though output has been below the P50 level much more than you'd expect over a period of time that long. So can you give some insight as to why you remain confident about the P50 in the context of that chart? And then the second question would be, of the five wind farms that you've already reviewed, and you feel that there's no reason to change P50, what proportion of output for 2008 would that cover? So first couple of questions.
Okay. On the first question, the chart that we show is, yes, it's only for 16 years, and in terms of wind, that isn't a long enough period to be able to say, well, have we covered all of the range? In fact, our data, we've analysed that out for 30 years, and we haven't shown that in the graph, but I think if you look at it, the longer the term you look at it, the more obvious it is that P50 is in the middle of the chart. If you show a shorter section of the chart, you know, you may be above or below. That's the only reason why the chart you see for that 16 years, maybe, I haven't actually looked as closely, but maybe it looks like it's a bit more on average less than P50.
So it's a subpar period of time you consider it as.
Yeah, and so our analysis is typically over longer terms than that. You can have sort of quite long periods that we've shown in one of our charts. You can have 3 or 4 years or more that might be below or above P50, so it depends on which particular block of time you take. On your second question, I need to refer to Jeff as to what proportion of the total portfolio those five wind farms represented, but the movement, as Jeff said, as a result of that independent review of those five, was less than 1%, I think, overall.
That's definitely one important point, which is the non-material adjustment we talk about is less than 1%.
No, I appreciate that binds only a confidence over where your confidence is. Insofar as you've taken 5 grand farms, confirmed that P50 is intact. But how many, you know, what is that in terms of your gigawatt hours in OAs? You're saying that you're confident over 15 to 20% of your output for OAs in terms of the reviews that you've done? It'd just be a useful number to have.
Oh, in terms of, I can come back to it with a more exact number, but I'd certainly be higher than 20%. I'd be certainly closer and up well above 50% to the confidence of the P50s, particularly.
Hi, John Hershey from Deutsche Bank. A question for Jeff. You mentioned in your presentation that you're more conservative in your ramp-up assumptions. Could you give us some clarification on that? Are you 10, 20% more conservative than what you had previously?
First of all, it's on a project-by-project basis, as you understand. And I'll give you one example. Take one of the more recent US wind farms. So, for example, experience on some wind farms, not all, is that in certainly the first 3 years, you'll have basically the classic, as with a car, things happen, things have to be improved, things have to be worked on. We would, for example, if we have a industry standard 97% availability as a benchmark, we would in the first 6 months reduce that to in circa 80%, 80-85%. Then for the next 12 months after that, we would ramp that up to say 90 or low 90s. And then depending on the turbine, particularly itself, how big the wind farm was, the impact of, and just to go further on that, is the impact of one turbine in 15 is a lot bigger than one turbine in 50. So taking all those things to account, we would then ramp it up over pretty much a 3-year period of what is what we're starting to take into account, reflecting turbine manufacturer, the specifics of the wind farm, and what we've experienced previously with that kind of combination.
Those adjustments have been included in our forecasts. So that's why we're saying we think there's upside now in terms of the where the forecasts are now, based off that amended ramp-up.
Sure. Another question, if I could, then. In terms of the issues you had with the turbines in the US, could you give us an update there as to what the outcome has been of that?
Yes, the turbines were the GSG and Allegheny Phase 1 turbines. We reached an agreement with Gamesa, which there's an announcement on our website about that, where we agreed with them back in June, from memory, to accept those two wind farms, subject to some conditions, which where Gamesa had to complete rectification of some of the wind farm components. Jeff, you can perhaps give a better idea as to the date when that's expected to be completed.
For Allegheny GSG, the blade rectification is expected to be completed by the end of September, and that's when it's expected that there's a warranty arrangement in place during that transition period, for when we'll go into an extended warranty, which will spread out over to 5 years.
Did it impact any of the other wind farms that had to miss providing the turbines?
No, only as Miles mentioned, to do with Allegheny 2. There is a bit of a backlog that Gamesa are working through in the US, so that's the only implication in the context of BBW.
Because some of the other projects other than ours as well that were affected.
Thank you.
I think, Grace, you had a question.
Just with the wind speeds in the air being 17% below long-term wind speeds, did you have the same sort of extreme weather factors that you had last year? I know we sort of talked about the major factors sort of affecting why production has been less than forecast, but just with the other sort of factors.
Yeah, you answer that one.
I think you're referring, Grace, more to May, June in Spain particularly, or last summer, the FY06. No, we didn't see that extreme, is the short answer. We did have some, I think I mentioned the spread of performance previously. We did have a couple of, one-off bad months, but they certainly weren't the experience of weather that we saw last summer.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Scott Kelly at UBS. Just back on to the warranties. When BBW first listed, I think most of the wind farms that were put into the portfolio had warranties in place over the start-up now. You just said that about, I think it was 40% of those have been refunded. Does that mean that the remaining 50% you don't expect to be refunded? And can we take that to mean with all the shortage in turbines that that is going to be more a fact of life going forward, that the warranties are not going to be as common as they were a couple of years ago.
The 40% relates to those wind farms where we do have the turbine warranties. The balance that isn't covered by warranty is not because the turbine supplier won't give it to us or the circumstances have changed. What it is it's balance of plant items. So that means it's things in the wind farm, like Jeff mentioned before, underground splicing and cabling, for example. It's actually undertaken not by the turbine manufacturer but by the balance of plant provider. Which in this particular case are not warranted.
And are you looking towards trying to get that warranted after these sort of concerns? Or?
The Sweetwater experience, I think, was a unique one in that we haven't had a situation where we've had that level of cable failures and not had some sort of recourse back to the balance of plant provider, and certainly something we'll be looking at in the future in terms of our balance of plant conflict.
Yeah.
One has led to a more significant change in that our design standards for high voltage devices on those kind of wind farms are now above ground. So, as Miles said, we hadn't known or experienced that before in terms of the context of high voltage devices. So as a result, as we fix them now, they're coming above ground, and on any future wind farms, they get done above ground in the first instance.
Okay. And with respect to your modelling of your wind farms and future potential acquisitions, how far out do you model? The life of the assets is typically 20, 25 years. Is that sort of broadly how far out of your model?
Typically it is, yes. And you may have seen there's a lot of recent transactions in Europe and in the US where the market, I guess, is placing a significant premium on the value of a brownfield site at the end of that 25-year period. We've always viewed that as like an option. And what's happening and will be increasingly relevant for us going forward is that as the wind farm gets older, the technology, particularly for smaller turbines in our portfolio, the potential to repower the site, which basically means removing the existing components or even the whole turbine and replacing it with larger, more efficient turbines, fewer of them typically, that will become more of a prospect for our wind farms going forward. And so we're looking at that as part of our analysis. I think we've mentioned previously to the market that we look at in terms of our residual debt, we assume about a 30% residual in these deals because we think that's realistic. When you consider that at the end of the period you would have a brownfield site, effectively, with a number of infrastructure items that could be reused, for example, connection, the fact that it's a permitted site, the usual things that apply to brownfields, either whether it's electricity or any other industry, so we think that's a significant value. We've always thought of that as a significant value, but there's no change in our modelling other than as we previously announced with 30% debt residual.
Yeah, I guess I was sort of comparing 100 years of data to 16 years of data, which we saw on the chart. 16 years of data where the majority is underperformed is a lot more relevant when you're only modelling out 20, 25 years for a wind farm than longer than 25 years.
I understand your point. The particular 16 years that you're talking about, I haven't done the sums to see just how much it is under 350. It might be just slightly under 350, I don't know. But that also reflects specifically the portfolio that we've had over that period of time, which as we said, from the beginning of the year, although it's diversified, with only 6 wind regions, now we've moved to 9 at a bigger scale.
Yeah.
So we're expecting that variability that you see because of our portfolio increased scale and diversification will reduce significantly.
Yeah.
And it's really, we're starting to see that already, but I think we'll see it significantly more in years going forward.
Yeah. And this is probably a question more for Babcock and Brown, but certainly I agree prices that we're seeing for wind assets go, particularly in the US at the moment, is considerably higher than what Babcock & Brown has been selling the wind farms into BBW, based on my numbers anyway, and I guess I'm trying to work out whether we could expect prices to be going up.
Well, given this is BBW's results presentation, Peter, do you want to address that, or do you want me to address that?
I'll address it wearing a BBW hat, in that BBW only did transactions that are accretive and in addition to continuing on it. So it's sort of indifferent as to the price point for BNB. It'll be looking to its security holders' interests.
And there are obvious other benefits to BNB as well, including the ongoing base fees and potential incentive fees and so on out of managing BBW.
Would just also comment on your previous question in terms of statistically, yesterday's win is irrelevant for tomorrow's win. So whether you're looking at 16 years of a 25-year analysis or 160 years, it sort of doesn't make any difference.
Were there any more questions from the floor before we go to the telephones? No, well, we might open up questions from the telephones.
The first question comes from Matthew Spence from Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi guys, my questions are actually around slide 22 and P50 as well, so thanks for that. So I guess all I want to cover off is to confirm that for 08 and 09 you'd look to cover your distribution with operating cash flow. There'd be no change to that policy.
That's absolutely correct. No change to that policy.
Okay, thanks. That's all I had.
Next question comes from Jenny Cosgrove from Wilson HTM. Please go ahead.
Thanks. My question is, of any of the five wind farms that you've had the third-party confirmation of P50, were any of those in the Olivo Spain portfolio?
Jeff, do you want to
answer? Yes, two of those. I mentioned that previously that was the Sierra del Trigo wind farm and La Muela Norte.
Okay. And the remainder you have been operating since 05 and 06, would you expect those to be recalibrated by a third party in the next reporting period?
Of the four remaining, the longest, just looking for the portfolio, somebody can confirm this, but the longest operation was from the beginning of 2006. So we'd certainly be looking towards getting a little bit more operational data before we put those into a full-blown review process. And the first of those, I'm just going through the numbers here, and this, it's Sierra Nova being the next one, and Red Ondal. At the moment, we're preparing to do those, but we do need to gather, as I was mentioning, at least 3 years of operational data to be able to analyse them correctly.
Great. Can you name the other three wind farms that make up the five?
The five
that have been third party assessed.
Oh, the Sweetwater 1, 2 and 3.
Thank you.
There are no further questions from the phones at this time.
I'll just come back to the floor here then. Are there any last questions before we wrap up here? No? Well, thank you very much, everybody here today, and thank you very much, everybody on the phones. Look forward to talking to you again soon.